Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we chop it up about work and money for millennials with the hope we don't leave you saying, this just ain't for me.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances, all words.
And if you've been enjoying the show, drop by and hit us with the 5 stars on iTunes. If you don't know how, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review. It helps us stay visible in the rankings, which means we reach more people.
And if we reach more people, we help more people. So today we're joined by Donna Friedman. Donna is the author of Your Playbook for Tough Times, Living Large on Small Change for the Short Term or the Long Haul. She has over 20 years of experience writing about and helping people with personal finance for media organizations like MSN Money and online publications, including Vox Media and Get Rich Slowly. Thanks for joining us, Donna.
Thanks for inviting me.
So beyond that little bio that I gave there, I guess, tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you want the people to know?
Well, that I kind of backed into personal finance writing. In other words, I'm not a theoretical economist. I'm not a certified financial planner. I'm a regular civilian who went through some tough times, 3 different times in my life. And I sort of write what regular people do versus what the talking heads think everybody can do.
So what is an example of what the talking heads get wrong and which you get right in that lane?
Well, I hope I get it right. A lot of times personal finance bloggers say, get a side hustle, an extra job. And that's how you really break in the bucks or pay off your debt or put your kid in college, whatever your dream is. But that doesn't always work because for some people, it's impossible to get a first job if you're living in a really economically depressed area. Mm. And hello, Detroit. And if you already have a job and maybe a couple of kids, number one, you don't want to work all day and then work all night and never see them. And number two, the money you make at your side hustle might just about be eaten up by babysitting costs. So I do suggest people get a side hustle, but in the book, I suggest ways to make it work either by not leaving the home, by doing online jobs. There are legitimate ones out there. You just have to look for them, or to make it organic, something they're doing anyway. If you walk your dog every day and you notice your neighbor's dog is fat and grumpy, you could suggest to him, you know, if I walked Fido and I walked my dog, he'd be much better mood. He'd quit being so destructive. He'd quit jumping on you all the time because he'd be happy and exercised. So pay me $100 a week and I'll walk him every day. You're going to walk your dog anyway. So why not make a little money while you're doing it? So you see what I mean?
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
So do I. I'm sitting here. I'm like, huh, what little things can I just be asking for that I'm or talking to people about, like, hey, I could do this for you that wouldn't be too painful because there are things that I'm already doing in life. So, yeah, I like that idea.
Sure. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt it. I interviewed a lady who was walking her daughter to school every day, and she realized other mothers in the neighborhood who had to go to work before school were nervous about their kids walking alone. So she said, give me $5 a day and I'll do it. So she was getting $5 a day per child, and she was walking 5 or 6 kids to do something she was going to do anyway.
Man.
So that was genius, I thought. Find a need and fill it. You notice your neighbor is always having trouble getting to the dry cleaner before it closes. Well, you say, hey, I'll be your personal concierge. I'll go wait in line in the post office for that package, or I'll pick up your dry cleaning for you. But then I get paid for it.
Quick question there. So some people, it might be a little bit difficult for them to ask that neighbor or that friend for money in exchange for this service. So is there any advice you have for people who struggle with making that ask when money is involved?
Well, I think you have to know your own worth and know that you are providing a service just like any other service that people are willing to pay to have done. A lot of people no longer mow their own lawns because they decide they'd rather have that 2 hours on a Saturday to hang out with their family or to go hang out with their friends or just to sleep in. So they pay somebody and they don't sit there thinking, man, I wish that neighbor kid wouldn't charge me $20. They think, here, $20. Thanks, man. So know your own worth and again, promote it as a service you're going to provide to make their life better. And I did interview a young woman who called herself a personal concierge, and she was in Washington, D.C. She was making a lot of money. She was a single mom and in school, but she was doing things like helping people set up for dinner parties and picking up dry cleaning, people will call her and say, I need milk and bread and eggs and a box of cereal. Okay. And she'd go buy it and put it in their house because at that point she had a key, and they would pay her.
Huh.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah. That's wow. So many
smart
ways.
Woman. Very smart.
So on that kind of that lane, I was looking at your bio here, and it's lengthy as far as just jobs. So college, these are the ones I got. So college dropout, single mom, newspaper reporter in Chicago and Alaska, late in life university student. So I need to ask, because we talk about this with a few of the people we have on the show, what was the best and the worst job? And a story, if you feel like sharing.
Oh, boy. The best job, I think, is newspaper reporter. I worked in Alaska for 17 years and in the features department of a newspaper, and it was sort of like a playground for words. You got to do all these interesting and sometimes strange stories. And if you didn't like the story you were working on, well, that's okay. In another 2 days, you'll be doing something different. And there was a real sense of excitement and camaraderie about the newspaper. And at that point, newspapers still mattered. And that was... I stopped working in Alaska in 2001. So a lot of changes since then. But it was a great job. You got to do a lot of strange, strange things. And also some very ordinary things like writing about how to find childcare or how to get healthy after a heart attack. So what it did was teach me an awful lot. And I can talk to just about anybody in the world now because I know I've had so many experiences with so many different things. So it makes it easy for me to chat with people.
Nice.
And the worst job, that's a tie. When I was 13, I got hired to work in a greenhouse picking tomatoes.
Oh, I was going to ask what type of things were in this greenhouse, but you know, because it's 2016, tomatoes. So it could be anything.
wasn't that stuff, no. No, these were designer tomatoes, if you will, for the fancy market in Philadelphia and New York. And I was, it was high summer, South Jersey, very humid and more humid in the greenhouse. The tomatoes were much taller than I was. I could just about reach the top by standing on tiptoe, and I'm 5'9". And you would surround it on all sides by these branches. I don't know if you've ever smelled tomato foliage. It stinks.
Nah,
and I would go home covered with green sap and washing my hair and have green bubbles coming off my head. Wow. And I also had to ride my bike there. My friend and I, we had to ride our bikes there, and it was 2 miles each way. And I was thrilled to get the job, even though I hated it because it was making $1.35 an hour, baby. That's big money.
That's ball
huge
out.
Money. Indeed, I was set. But the tie for that was right after high school, I worked in a glass factory for 2 months to get money for school. Wow, was that hot in there. It was so hot. You were standing on your feet on these concrete floors for 8 hours a day, except that I worked a lot of double shifts. So I was standing on concrete floors for 16 hours a day. The money was very good for the time, but boy, was it. That was a great lesson in what I did not want to do for a living.
Is that even legal to work 16 hours?
Yeah, it is. We had as many options as we wanted. Do you want to work? Okay, work. And yeah. It was hard. It was very hard.
Yeah, I can't say that's on my list of top things I'd want to do.
Yeah, well, it's my dad says that's why they call it work. If it were fun, they'd call it fun. But I have to say the newspaper job was fun and work.
Awesome.
And actually, yeah, along those lines, sorry, I'm thinking of another question here. What do you think is the importance, or does it matter as far as work and fun? I think, you know, the millennials, which I unfortunately or fortunately, I'm not really sure, me and Rich are, we get accused a lot of, well, we want work to be fun. Do you think that's a avenue that should be pursued, and can it be achieved?
It can be achieved, but you can also look at it as I will do a certain job for a certain amount of time to make my life better. Like that glass factory was not my idea of fun. It was for my 1 year of college at that time. Then I didn't go back for almost 30 years. I thought, I don't like this job. It's very difficult, but I'm doing well at it and I'm making a lot of money and I'm going to save it and go to school. And then I won't have to do this for 30 years the way the ladies who are standing all around me are doing. Mm-hmm. I had relatives who worked in the glass factory, and yeah, it's not a very easy way to make a living. You can also, I don't seem to think there's anything wrong with wanting to enjoy your work. I mean, you spend as much time at work as you do with your family or on your off hours, shall we say. Because if you work 8 hours and you sleep 8 hours, the other 8 hours of the day are yours. You might as well enjoy the work hours if you can.
Right.
Now, that said, somebody's got to do the dirty work, and some people look at it as a challenge.
Right. Now, there's something you said there that really resonated with me, and it's, you know, and sometimes you'll do a job and it's for a finite time because you know it's going to allow you to do something else. And, you know, I've been and we talked about this a little bit when we checked in yesterday. I've been thinking about kind of what I want to do in the future, and I've actually set a goal for myself to be able to go out and do my own thing independently within a specified amount of time. And once I did that, it put everything else in perspective in terms of why I'm doing what I'm doing, what I need to do to ensure that I'm on track to be able to hit that goal. And even the things that I do outside of the day gig, it's helped me put those things in order. So that idea of going into something, knowing that you may not love it in the moment, but of course I love my job right now. You know, my role has actually changed a bit. And so of course I love that. But you know, you may be in a day-to-day situation and you're like, ah, I really don't want to be doing this right now. I could be doing so much more. But that day job, if you're not already doing other things, that day job is what's providing you the money to be able to go and do that thing later on. So you might as well be as good at it as you can during that time period that you're there. So any thoughts on that?
Yes, a lot of millennials are interested in entrepreneurship and or working less and enjoying their lives more. And I say, if you can get a real stinky job like a glass factory and work for 3 months and then take off and spend half the year traveling around the world really inexpensively and really seeing things that you wanted to see, I say go for it. You do have to think about the future, but you also have to remember to live a little bit in the present. Mm. Up here in Alaska, people will quit a job, a perfectly good job, because they've decided they want to climb Mount McKinley or run the Iditarod dog sled race. And nobody thinks that's weird. They think, oh, cool. They don't say, you're crazy, man. That was a good job you quit. Well, yeah, but I once saw a teleplay on television, and it was a man who was meeting a woman who lost her husband, and he said, I'm a mailman. No, he said, I'm a letter carrier. That's not what I am. It's what I do. So you can define yourself by your job if you want. If you want to say, I'm an entrepreneur who works in podcasting, that's great. But my partner, his son, his second son, after the first couple of weeks of college, he realized it was just not for him. He was never a scholar. And he said, can you get your money back, Dad? I don't want to do this. And my partner was, of course, disappointed. But he said, as long as you're working, I don't care if you stay here. You can stay here. You can move out, whatever. Well, his son is now just finished becoming a journeyman with the plumbers and pipe fitters. And he is making boatloads of money.
Yeah.
He's 22 years old and he just bought a house.
Nice.
And he's so smart. He's got three coworkers living in there with him, you know, renting out bedrooms and helping him pay his mortgage. And he's looking at the long term, which is that plumbers and pipe fitters, the first day on the job, an older fella said, look around you. Do you see any really old plumbers? And Ben looked around, said, no, sir, I don't. He said, well, that's the thing. You got to save for the future and then you can do what you want, even if that means nothing at all. So this kid he's not a kid. He's 22 years old. He's a man. He's putting all this money aside. He's thinking about buying more property and renting it out. And he's being really, really smart with his money. And in the meantime, even though plumbing and pipe fitting doesn't sound like everybody's cup of tea, he's doing a lot of things like building power plants and building and working on hospitals. And he gets a real sense of satisfaction out of doing stuff like that. So I say, whatever floats your boat.
Now, is he based in Alaska or is he elsewhere?
He is. But that particular line of work, they're talking about, they recently told him he could go get some jobs in Australia or Ireland.
Wow.
And I said, what are you waiting for, kid? Go. Go now. Go right now. Yeah, why not go see Ireland or Australia? And there was one other place. I can't remember. And he's also going to be tapped to work in the lower 48, as we call it. Because he's learning a particular type of pipe fitting. It's how to pipe the different gases that they use in surgical centers and hospitals. That's a very specialized type of work. So every time they build a hospital or a surgical center in Florida or wherever, and they don't have enough guys, they'll call him down for an obscene amount of money.
Wow.
So anyway, I that was off on a tangent a bit, but I just wanted to remind people that you don't, what you want to do is absolutely up to you. And even if your friends think you're crazy to do this job or that job, it's your choice, not theirs.
No, I think it was right on point. And it's
I was over here reflecting when you said there are no old plumbers. It kind of reminded me of the where are the baby pigeons question. I was like, you know, I can't think of the last time I saw an old plumber because they're probably all retired. So on that same line, because people do ask about this and we've shared our dirty laundry here. Mine was selling knives door to door, but maybe you have one that was actually successful. Did you do any get rich quick schemes that were either embarrassingly took a lot of money or one that succeeded?
No, as you can tell, I used to work for a site called Get Rich Slowly. So, no, I've never been an entrepreneur along those lines. No.
You won there, trust me. It seems like every story ends with we bought a lot of products and they took all my money. So I think just that's a lesson that I'm hoping somebody comes on and goes, yes, here's the perfect get rich scheme. And it finally works. But yeah, living the dream, I guess.
I was going to say, I definitely thought that I was going to get my commission game up when I was telemarketing and getting people's social security numbers and date of birth so that we could run their credit and try to sell them in loans. That was very dirty. That was a very dirty job.
Yeah, my shortest job ever was cold calling credit card sales for, I think I lasted 1 week. And I remember the most successful guy played the guitar over the phone while selling credit cards. It's actually the most
amazing. My gosh. Oh, my gosh.
He was like,
does that have a hypnotic effect on people?
I don't know. He would like serenade old women, I assume, into buying credit cards. Because pretty much all of our demographic was like 70 and up. So, Rich is right. I don't even know if they still have them around. I don't even know they're legal anymore. But it was an interesting experience, which is what it's all about.
Yeah.
Which is a perfect segue. So any credit card debt tools that you'd like to share or tips? I see here that your daughter also wrote a book. If you want to plug that, feel free to do so.
Yes. Well, my daughter has chronic fatigue after a neurological illness, and she also she's bipolar and suffers from depression and always has ever since she was a little kid. She has written a book called Frugality for Depressives, Money Saving Tips for Those Who Find Life a Little Bit Harder. Mm-hmm. And it is not just for the depressed. It's for anybody with a chronic illness or any other issues that keep them from doing certain frugal hacks like the second job. Some people with fatigue or depression can't even work a first job, like doing all your own housework and doing all your own cooking and doing all your own yard work. Some people, for whatever reason, they cannot do it. So she does what I call hack the hacks. She gets all the frugal hacks and says, okay, if this doesn't work for you, try it this way. Mm. And as far as credit cards go, she has that in her book as well as and so do I, because like it or not, credit scores are the system in which we live. And when people say, I'm only going to use debit and I'm never going to use credit, it's evil. Well, the result, unfortunately, is that you end up paying a lot more interest in loans. If you can even get loans without credit score, you'll pay more for your car loan and your mortgage and other things because you don't have a credit score. Like it or not, you need to play within that set of rules. Now, you don't need to go into debt to do it. You charge only things that you were going to buy anyway. And in fact, go home and pay the bill right away. I know a woman who would make up to 14 payments a month because every time she made a big purchase of groceries or boots or whatever she needed, she would go home and send a payment to the credit card company. They don't care how many times a month you pay them. Although, frankly, they wish you wouldn't pay them and they could charge you a lot of interest. So that's one way of getting around it, is go ahead and charge your groceries. Then go home and send a $47 payment or whatever you spent to your credit card company. Just don't get into debt. I have a horror of debt. I was in debt during my divorce because there was no alternative. I was broke at that point. It was very protracted. Mm. And my ex made good on his promise to drag it out as long as possible. And so we would both be broke when it was over. That was his actual stated intent. So, and it almost worked.
Wow.
But I still had to keep paying the lawyer. So I did go into debt and 14 months after the divorce was ended, I finally made the last payment. I was very, very happy about that.
Now, you mentioned something also when we chatted yesterday. Now, I didn't know this, but and I'm not sure if you were joking, but you said that divorce lawyers charge by the minute. Is that true?
They sure do. At least mine did. It would say February 4th. Talked with client about latest letter from husband's lawyer, 4 minutes, that sort of thing. Seriously, by the minute. So I learned very quickly not even to be very polite. Say, oh, hi, how are you doing today? I would just say, hello, I'm returning your call. What's up? Because yeah. The longer, the more you talk, the more it costs you.
Yeah, I might try to send them a tweet or something to save some money.
Hey. They would probably charge you to read the tweet. They would probably charge you to read the
exactly.
tweet.
Exactly.
Had to hit quote tweet 60 seconds.
Rich used slang word, had to research Urban Dictionary for 2 minutes.
So exactly. The other thing, and when we talk about credit card debt, there are a lot of mistakes that people make. And I know that you think that a lot of folks are out there getting hosed. But I guess what really gets you fired up when it comes to talking about credit card debt?
Well, again, the idea that people think they don't need credit cards. And the other idea is that people don't know much about them. Some people think that carrying a balance on your credit card improves your credit score. It really doesn't. If you want to know more about credit cards, I would suggest people go to, there's a woman named Beverly Harzog. She's written a couple of books, including Confessions of a Credit Card Junkie. She was in debt. Once she got out of it, and she was a financial planner, she wrote this book. She has a website called Beverly Harzog. It's H-A-R-Z-O-G, beverlyharzog.com. She has no arrangement with the credit card companies, as in she doesn't get a fee every time somebody buys one. So she can be absolutely, utterly impartial. Another good place to find information about credit card and credit cards in general and how to get a good one is NerdWallet. It's another website.
They do a lot
of card readings. And for some people, Beverly is the way to go because, again, she has absolutely no affiliation. So she can be blunt, super blunt, because there are some terrible cards out there. And she will write about them and say, don't do this one, don't do that one. Here are some that might work for you. Yet have never had a card before? Try these. Had some card issues, well, and you want to get back in the game, try one of these. She also answers all the notes people send her. So again, and I'm not getting paid to recommend her, by the way. I just know her and I know she's really passionate about getting people a good information and the best deal they can, especially if they're coming off of difficult circumstances. That you go in and you get a card that's not ideal and then you build up your score and then you get a better card.
Nice.
So folks, don't drive yourself crazy. I'll get that information in the show notes for you. And then my question there is going to be, so what is, that's interesting to me because I usually only read or honestly talk about the good credit cards and here's what you should go to. So what would a bad credit card entail? Like what are some of the horrible credit cards that you've heard about?
I can't remember specifics, but specific names, but cards that charge you a really high monthly fee just to have the card cards that charge ridiculous rates of interest no matter how promptly you pay. Because sometimes if you've been paying regularly and then you look at your card and realize I'm paying 29% interest, you call the card company and say, I'd really like to pay a lot less interest because you look at my record. I always pay on time. And I've got several offers here who are offering me much lower interest. A lot of times they'll just drop it because they want to keep you. They want you. They want you to go in deeply into debt so that they can charge you a lot more interest. So they will sometimes work with you. I don't know any more specifics about bad cards, except that when you read her articles about bad cards, you'll think, holy cow, how is this even legal?
Now,
but people are desperate.
Yeah. I've seen some crazy things out there and heard things from people. But there's one thing that I think is less crazy that I know a lot of people try to avoid. And that's cards that have not a monthly fee, but instead an annual fee in exchange for the reward. And so I know people who will pass over a card with the annual fee just because there's an annual fee, despite the fact there may be some other benefits that are actually worthwhile. So do you have any thoughts on cards that have annual fees?
If you're a super traveler, for example, some of the really high-end cards might have a $5 to $100 annual fee, but they start you out with a whole bunch of miles. If you're a real travel hacker, for the average person, I would say there's enough cards out there that don't charge a fee. I myself, full disclosure, I have credit cards. I use them. I love the rewards. I'm paying for all my Christmas and birthday shopping with the gift cards that I get from them. And I have a card with Alaska Airlines, and I take trips to go see my dad with those miles. But I recently canceled that card because I realized I was paying the $60 annual fee And each year they give you a companion fare, which means I buy a ticket and I could take somebody with me for $100. But I realized I wasn't using it every year. I was giving it to my niece sometimes. And I realized, why am I paying this? I've got these other great cards. I've got a Chase Freedom card, which I like a lot. And I've got a Citi thank you card. Yep. And let's see, what are the others? I've got to discover that I'm not using enough. I do believe, and this is another side trip here, I believe you need more than one card for several reasons. During one memorable 2-month period and 2 years ago, three of my cards were compromised.
Oh,
I guess it was some kind of a hack. One of them was definitely a hack. Alaska Airlines was hacked.
Those damn Alaskan hackers.
Damn them. Well, the thing is if you have one card and it gets compromised while you're out of town, you are SOL because it takes them a week to get you a new card. And in the meantime, how are you going to get home? I was in London, England, a couple of years ago. I saved up and got myself a great trip. And I got a call from my card company asking if I'd just tried to buy a few hundred dollars worth of lawnmowers at a Walmart in Florida. And I said, you know, I think I'd remember that. No, that was not me. Okay, we're canceling your card. Well, there I was in London. Well, luckily I had another card because I always carry two when I travel. Also, on another time, I was going to the Financial Blogger Conference, which is something I speak at every year, and I got mugged on the way to the airport.
Oh, wow.
Well, they got my wallet with one of my cards in it, but I also had one in my pocket and one on an inside coat pocket zipped away. Because I always think, well, what if I get mugged? And I never had up until that moment. And I kept thinking, I don't have time for this. I have to get on a plane. I was on my way to the train to the airport in downtown Seattle when I got these two guys decided that they needed my money more than I did. And I hope they get bleeding piles is all I can say, because that really hurt getting mugged. But if I hadn't had the other card, once I got there, I would have been in trouble. Because I don't carry hundreds of dollars when I travel, you know. So
even
have two cards, but even if you just put one away in a really secure place. Oh, and use the card at least once a year.
I will say, even your level of preparation for an event that you didn't think would ever occur was like on some James Bond level. I'm like thinking, like, if I got robbed, they'd have everything because it's
everything.
I'd give them my wallet. I don't have any like secret hidden pockets. Like,
no.
I'm
slide out my credit card from my sleeve like a shootout gun. Exactly. Like,
yeah. Well, I had $60 cash in my wallet, but most of my money was, again, zipped into this inside pocket of my coat. Because I figure if you're getting mugged and the guy says, give me your wallet, and he looks in there and there's $1 and you've got a suitcase with you, he knows you've got money somewhere. He's going to say, empty out your pockets. So I just figure you get some money, you're fine. But the fact is, you need more than one card, and you need to think, well, what would I do if one of these were compromised? Well, I'd just get the other one out. But again, especially when you're on the road.
I just found a whole new reason to use tube socks. Pause.
What, not just as a fashion statement?
No, I mean, I'm like, I could probably put a card on the left calf, then have a few dollars on the right side and be good to go.
Yep. Well, it's called hypervigilance, and I do suffer from PTSD, actually. I developed PTSD years ago when my daughter was so ill. Mm. Being in the hospital for a couple of months with her and being so terribly, terribly stressed. And one of the side effects of PTSD is something they call hypervigilance, where you're always, always on alert. And you think of these things, and other people just look at you and think, oh, come on, you're not going to get mugged. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might be. So it doesn't hurt to be a little hypervigilant about your finances. But what would happen if I did lose my job? You know, oh, I'm not going to lose my job. My boss loves me. Well, you can't really be sure. What would happen if I couldn't work for 3 months? If I did break my leg, say. It doesn't hurt to think. In fact, the first chapter of my book is called The Financial Fire Drill. And it's getting people to look at their finances and say, what is the absolute minimum I need to live on each month? You know, rent or mortgage, basic food, basic utilities, basic debt service, like paying my student loan each month. And you figure out how much that is and cut out all the frills. And then you look at the bottom line and think, huh, that's pretty good. And then if you do lose your job later, you can look at your unemployment check and then look at your bottom line and say, okay, I'm cool, at least for a few months. And you also have to do things like investigate forbearance and deferment before you need it. So once you've got a student loan going, if I were your listeners, find out how you do in deferment and find out how you do forbearance. Because so, if you do lose your job or you do get sick, you're going to be so stressed, you're not going to want to start looking then. Look while things are going well.
I'm familiar with the deferment. What's a forbearance? Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
I'm not sure if you've caught me here. I don't know the exact difference, even though I did write about it. Forbearance, it's similar to deferment.
Okay.
But there's also rules about how often you can do each one. So again, look them both up. And in the book, I have the links to the government agencies that can explain these things to you. Just know what you would do. You don't have to ever do it. You probably, put another way, not very many schools burn down and not very many homes burn down, but you still do fire drills. And I think that you should do the same with your finances. Just be ready.
And along those lines, what do you think or have you seen is the hardest thing about designing and or sticking to a budget for people?
Oh, boy. Well, the word budget itself just makes people twitch. I like to say that. The word budget is like the word diet or the word colonoscopy. It makes you think about deprivation. It makes you think about sacrifice or even pain. You might be afraid of what you're going to find out. What if I do a budget and find out the way I'm living is not sustainable? Well, a budget is really, it's just a tool to make your money go where it's going to do you the most good. It could mean, okay, I want to save for retirement and I want to start a college fund for my kid, but it could also mean great vacation paid for in cash versus going into debt. You're not hoarding every dime just in case something terrible happens, despite what I said a minute ago. You're directing your money so that something good will happen. And some people don't even call it a budget. They call it a spending plan or a spending intention statement. I call it Bob the Budget. If you want, just do it. Just make it. And another thing about spending, with the budget, think about personal expenditures that you're going to do in terms of their true benefit.
If you're like me, you probably hate grocery shopping. And if you're like me, you probably hate figuring out dinner every night. And that's where HelloFresh comes into play. So HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novice chefs like myself to seasoned home cooks. And one of the best things about this is if you're cooking just for yourself, each meal could last you 2 days. I discovered that when I was making this sizzling beef stir fry last week. I promise you, it really was sizzling. And if you're wondering how the food gets delivered, it arrives at your doorstep in a special insulated box for free, 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 free. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks. Again, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks when you subscribe. Check it out.
Fit to your life. When you're budgeting, make sure you budget for some lunches out with friends. But don't go out to lunch every day. Carry your lunch if possible, at least part of the time. And it's great fun to go shopping with your friends, but if you find out you tend to get carried away and buy too much, you'll regret it later on. So the money that an opportunity cost, the money you spent to run up that card bill and the money you're spending in terms of credit card interest, that's money you can't put to something you want, like that entrepreneurship.
Right.
Or retirement. It's opportunity cost. If I hadn't spent it here, I could be spending it there. And I think I told Rich, here's my motto. I save where I can so I can spend where I want. My income is a tool. I use it to build a life that works for me. And each of your readers or listeners, rather, has to understand, what do I want the most and how can I make that happen versus, well, my friends are all doing this. I need to do this too.
Love that. Love that. And I do tie it to what we were talking about before, where you're kind of looking ahead and anticipating things that haven't happened. And it's something that I actually do with my budget, because there are things that we don't anticipate when we're making a budget. And so we're like, okay, cool. I've got all my current expenses. But then if one thing comes up, so say, for example, someone may budget for getting gas every month, but they may not budget for incidental auto expenses, things that they may have to get fixed throughout the year. So then if one thing happens that month, their budget is pretty much blown up. you know, me, I'm also one of those people who kind of like frets and is like, what if this, like, what if there's a shark out there? Like, what if the branch falls, even though like there's no wind today? I'm one of those people. And so I'll actually put a line in my budget just for things that I think may happen, so that that's money that I'm saving each month that kind of goes into a separate account, so that if I do have one of these incidental things come up that, you know, may or may not happen, the funds are at least there. So is that something that you do, or something that you advise people to do, or is there a different way you've seen people kind of tackle that?
Well, everybody's heard the words emergency fund, and that's for the things that aren't covered by your daily budgeting. You may allow, say, $200 a month for gas and new windshield wipers and occasional new quart of oil, but then you have a car breakdown. That's probably not going to come out of your daily budget. That's probably going to come out of the emergency fund. Mm-hmm. Mary Hunt, who's been writing about personal finance, gosh, 30 years now, she has something called the Freedom Fund, and it's freedom from debt. Every year, you know, Christmas comes every year at the same time, and every year people are surprised that it shows up. She figures out how much she's going to spend on her family and friends and divides that number by 12. And every month she puts, you know, $17 or whatever it ends up being in the Freedom Fund. She says, if you know you've got one more year left on those tires, find out how much they're going to cost. Divide that number by 12 and put that much in the Freedom Fund. Things you know you're going to need. You know that it's been 3 years since I had my eyes examined. I know I need new contacts, and that the eye exam is going to be $160. You know, divide it by 12 and put that much in the account. And then when you need to buy those things, the money's there.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, you mentioned the holidays, and we're in that season where people are thinking about buying gifts for all of those special people in their lives, parents, significant others, friends, colleagues, whatever it may be. How do you... I guess, what advice do you have for people during this time of the year? Because this is, and this is actually a time of the year that a lot of people, I don't think they budget for it unless they're, you know, kind of already in a relationship or already have a family where they think like, crap, I'm going to need to shell out, you know, $500 in gifts. And in the case of me and my fiance, we're going to have to fly across the country to two different states. But I guess, what advice do you have for people around this time of the year as they're thinking about gifts and all of these other things that typically come with the holidays?
I would say writing it down, making an actual list, and being really, really thoughtful about it. I mentioned to Rich yesterday, I go completely insane when I go into a store and hear Christmas carols, because they were the same songs I sang when I was in the junior choir at the Fairton Methodist Church. And I remember everybody, we were not a rich family. So when we got something for Christmas, it was huge to get a toy. And we had just had a lot of nice feelings surrounding those songs. Well, you need to know what your triggers are. Yeah, that you actually believe the ad that says, doesn't your family deserve the best? Well, it's really, really convenient that the people who get to define the best are the people who package it and sell it. You have to decide what's worth to you. And another exercise I recommend is make a list right now of everything you got for Christmas last year. And I bet you can't remember it all. I know I can. Unless it was a really big ticket item, like an engagement ring or a car, a new puppy, whatever, most people can't remember. So why are you spending so much money on things that don't matter? And more people are going for experiences rather than stuff. So that helps. If you know your best friend is really stressed, if you buy her an hour-long massage, she's really going to appreciate that. And she doesn't have to dust it or find room for it in her house. But be mindful, I guess. Get back on the topic. Be mindful of what you're buying. Don't overdo it, because a commercial told you, the way you show love to people is by buying them stuff, because that's not really how it works. You have to stay true to yourself and not let other people define what you should be buying.
Yeah, I like that, because I can't remember what I got last year. That's probably going to tick at least two or three of the listeners off, because I think they bought me something. So maybe they can. I'm sure they'll quickly remind me, but I do not recall readily off the top of my head. Yeah. So we talked about in the beginning, the book that you've written, your playbook for tough times. We've hit on some of these topics now. Yes. Is there any others that you want to cover that you think would be of interest to the listeners?
Let's see. Well, the fact that it's for three groups of people, it's not just for those who are in tough times. It's also for people, and by tough times, I can mean, that can mean unemployed, underemployed. It can mean living paycheck to paycheck because, say, you have huge student loans. The second group is people who are looking at maybe tough times coming. For example, there's been a lot of layoffs in your industry or even in your department, or somebody in your family was just diagnosed with an illness that's going to mean that person can't work for 3 months or longer. So this is going to let you scale back and find smart ways to use your money that you already have. The third group is those entrepreneurs or others who want to live lean to realize a dream, as I call it. If you want to, that dream could be, I want to stay home with a child. I don't want to work for 2 years or 3 years. I want to start my own business. I want to travel the world with a backpack. I want to retire early. And that's another big one for millennials, retire early retirement. It helps you get a handle on your spending so that you don't just kind of blindly spend without really thinking about it. And again, the opportunity cost of that money.
Yeah. And what I like, I'm going to hit a quote from, I think it's something you plugged in the information you gave us. I'm not sure if it's directly out of the book, but is, I think people get overwhelmed, as we talked about, with the budget and this 6 month emergency fund. But I was actually surprised that it's something, I think he tweeted actually from Dave Ramsey, that said while putting out, paying off your debt to put aside an emergency fund of $1,000. I think most people are like, well, I can't do $10,000, so I won't do anything.
I just gave a talk yesterday at the University of Alaska bookstore, and I said that some of these PF people think you need 3 to 6 months worth of all expenses in a bank, and some say a year. And I say, that's a lovely dream, but stop making people feel defeated before they start. If you told me you need to have $10,000 in the bank by the end of this year extra, I'd think, whoa, where do I start? Oh, I can't. So I won't even bother. But even if you start with a few dollars a month being automated, at the end of the year, that'll be $120 that you didn't already have. In fact, there's a whole chapter called Challenge Yourself to Save, and it was about 3 dozen ways to set aside money, what I call stealth savings. Set aside money in very small ways or large ones. If you happen to get a bonus, for example, and I've never gotten a holiday bonus, but I know somebody who gets one. And if you can set aside even 10% of that bonus, that'll make a huge jump in your emergency fund. And I also want to point out, people talk about millennials being this, that, and the other. They have to plan their own retirements. A lot of the people doing the criticizing had generous pensions or had really good employee match for a 401k. So for them to criticize millennials for not having any money, well, they've got student loans and they're supposed to save for retirement. Well, and they're getting starter jobs. How in the world is that possible? I mean, it is possible, but it's very difficult.
Rich might need to fade in a slow clap here. I started to do it myself, but I didn't know.
the mic will pick that up.
Might throw off the show.
Okay. Well, look, I know from personal experience that when you are living really close to the bone, you're in its survival mode. You just want to make it through the day. You just want to get through that week. I mean, I was a single mom in Philly, and I was the day before payday, I would be taking change out of the baby's piggy bank to buy her some milk. Now, I would replace it the next day when I got paid. But and I actually, this is pitiful, and I hope none of you guys ever are this hard up. I did all our laundry in the sink on a scrub board because I didn't have quarters for the laundromat. I'm talking cloth diapers as well as clothing. And that was no fun. Literally stunk. But I did it because I had to. I hope none of your listeners are ever in that dire of straits. But I thought, what am I going to do, walk around in dirty clothes? There was no way back in that day, which we're talking 1979. I was a 21-year-old with a permanent part-time job. Nobody was going to give me a credit card. And in retrospect, thank God they didn't, because maybe I would have used it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to thank you for sharing stories like that, because I do. I mean, we might have a listener that either has, will, or is going through an experience like that. And I think, you know, it's good for them to hear that someone has gone through it and overcome it. So I definitely appreciate you sharing that. Mm-hmm. I want to give folks context, too, because I do think it's overwhelming. People think you have to be all, you know, a math whiz, a statistician, you know, just to put a budget together. And the stat was, according to a report from the Federal Reserve, 52% of U.S. residents would be unable to come up with $400 for an emergency. And I bring that up because I've warned our listeners all year. They're probably going to pretend like I haven't. But I told them that the average tax return is $3,000. I'm going to tell you to put I'm probably going to tell you to put all, but just putting, what is that, 1/6 of your tax return to the side would put you ahead of 52% of U.S. Like,
it would.
I think folks just think it, well, if I can't do it big, I won't do it at all. And I think removing some of those excuses and really just breaking it down, like if you took that, even just a piece of your tax return, you'd be ahead of one out of every two people.
Yeah. Liz Weston, who writes for NerdWallet now, she was at MSN Money when I was there. She said you should save 10% of any found money, like a tax refund or a bonus, or even, you know, somebody in your family hits the lottery and gives everybody $100. Spend 10% of it on yourself and put the rest away for those emergencies. It can be really tempting to want to spend some of that $3,000 on yourself because you keep thinking, I deserve it. And I've been working so hard. And I know that hurts. But you know what else hurts? Renewing a payday loan over and over and over because you have no options. How are you going to come up with that $400 if your family's tapped out and you don't have credit or your credit cards are maxed out? Unfortunately, you're probably going to end up someplace like payday loans, and that's not a good place to go.
Agreed. Agreed. So we generally close out on these types of topics with, and it's kind of a hot seat question, but I think you'll be okay. What is the one? And people always get struggle with that, so I have to repeat it. What the one best piece of personal finance advice you ever received, gave, or gotten?
That's a good question. That is a hot seat. Oh, boy. It may be something my daughter said during a tweet chat, during the Wisebread tweet chat. She said, remember that future you is going to be judging current you harshly. Because it's really hard to think about, a lot of people think, oh, I'll save for retirement later. Right now, it's all I can do to pay these student loans and have a little fun. Well, that becomes a sort of self-perpetuating notion. Oh, I know I'm 25 and I should be saving, but I'll wait next year. And then I'm in my early 30s and I should be saving, but we're having a baby. And it goes on and on and on. And pretty soon you realize you're in your 40s and you've got relatively little saved for retirement. It is possible to catch up, but it's going to be harder then than it is now. Compound interest is your friend. So just remember future you, as hard as that is going to be judging current you.
I like that a lot. This weekend, I won't say her name. Someone told me, uh-oh, she kept saying she was going to tell people she was going to start a family by 25. Now I'm 35 and I still tell people I'm going to start at 25. I was like, that's very insightful. Whatever it's worth. But I did hear some rumors that you might have a discount or some information that you want to share with our listeners. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I'm going to ask you to put the link into the show notes because it's a really long link to click on to pay $5 for the PDF version of your playbook for tough times. It's normally $6.99. The Kindle is $7.99 and the paperback is $9.49 on both of them, of course, on Amazon. But using the link that Rich and Marcus are going to put into the show notes and then using the discount code paychecks. But I'm sure he'll put that into the show notes as well.
Now, you got your people.
If they use that code, and by the way, it says PayPal, but you can also use a credit card. It's not just, you don't need a PayPal account per se to pay through that link.
I did make it easy for the people who aren't going to go to the show notes. So if you go to paychecksandbalances.com/YP for your playbook, that'll bring you to the page, and then all you need to do is type in paycheck. So paychecksandbalances.com/YP, and that'll take you off to the magical place where you can get your hands on the digital copy of the book.
Yes, and the code again, all uppercase, is paychecks, plural.
There it is.
And then where can the people find you? Are you a social media website you want to plug?
My personal website is donnafriedman.com. That's sort of my playground for words now that I'm not in the newspaper anymore. And I have a side gig. They see I have a side hustle. It's called Write a Blog People Will Read. And that has its own blog. It's all advice about writing, because I have the online course and the blog explains some of the reasons you need to be a better writer. And relatively rarely plugs says you should take my course. It's mostly a blog about writing and why it's a lot harder than people think, and why you should give yourself a break as a writer now and then. Some fun writing tips, some please don't do this ever tips for writers. But my main website is DonnaFriedman.com, and that's with two E's and a D, not a Friedman.
Cool. Thank you. We'll definitely have that in the show notes as well, folks.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, yeah. So, Donna, it's been awesome having you on the show.
Yeah, this has been a great conversation. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So a lot of insight, a lot of things I'm sure that our listeners will benefit from. And for the listeners, if you have questions or topics you'd like to hear covered on a future show, or you want to share thoughts with us about this episode, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com.
And don't forget to join our email list, where we share top articles we read throughout the week, work and money tips, and much more. You can sign up by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email.
There it is. So again, thank you so much for listening. Thanks to another great guest. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.